continued to get worse with child sexual abuse when I went back into care. So, of course, I've never known how to love. But something that's happening in my life now, I don't know, so many things are coming to the surface, but all I really resonate with right now and with what you're saying is that I need to embrace everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Correct.
Because it will serve me. It's serving me.
It will. For questions, comments, and to show your support, visit us on the web at afroempath.com.
You know, how we share what I'm talking about now might be even more useful to somebody who, you know, we'll see how I feel at the end about whether or not.
Not a problem, exactly. Yeah. Not a problem. It's all in your control. The ball's all in your court. But let me ask you, because this is what you typed to me. You said something about, now, I want to understand the background of this, like exactly what happened. How did you, I'm assuming you got put in the care system, which is like the foster care system, right? At some point when you were young?
Yeah, I was put in the care system. Yeah, the foster care, it started off with foster care and then it ended up with children's homes. So when we were very little, you know, like I think from what I can understand from my sister is that we were fostered out when we were very, very young, like babies. My parents came here from West Africa. They met each other here, and their whole ethos was that, you know, they're from well-off families. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, sis. I just muted myself for a second. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's my speaker. Hold on a minute, because I can't really hear you.
Are you hearing echo or no?
Much better. No, that's better now.
Okay, good.
That's much better. Yeah, so basically came here. My parents did what so many West Africans did in the 60s and 70s. And I think, you know, it's not so prevalent now, but they put us into foster care with white people. So what happened in the community, the Yoruba community, I know that Yoruba were really big with fostering out their kids to white people. They would meet poor white trash. And because they were white, they didn't see the trash element. And they would then organize that their children would be raised in these families. They had no police checks, no nothing. Just Mrs. Adelaide might know Mrs. Nike. And they would say, oh, you know, our children are with this one and their neighbors are also, you know, very good and looking to foster children, obviously for a fee. So that's how we were placed. And I remember, obviously, I have memories of two families that we stayed with. One, they were really, really nice. They were an elderly couple who had a mixed race granddaughter in Kent, England, obviously, just outside London. Mm-hmm. And they were nice. I remember we used to, the only thing I remember about them was that we went to a school or something, a school, could only been about 4 or 5. And I remember a teacher holding my hand so tight that she was wanting to hurt me. Yeah, because in those days, in the 60s, there were not many black children. We were the first generation. So she was holding my hand like she wasn't wanting to crush me. I don't know why. I think she was supposed to be speaking to people in the front of the class, but she wasn't holding my hand in a loving way. She was holding my hand to hurt me. And the only other thing I remember about the foster care, these particular foster care carers, is that they used to give us little sweets in a bag. And they were nice. I remember that. I don't know how I remember, but I remember our hair was a mess and our skin was a mess. And they didn't know how to take care of the hair and the skin. They had a mixed race granddaughter. Don't really remember if she was around a lot. Her name was Leah. She was mixed race, and I don't remember much about her. But this particular couple were old, but were really nice. And I don't really remember that much about them. And then I remember, don't remember much else because of the trauma of what childhood was. I remember them. I remember some other things about my family, but then if I'm going to Yeah. Then the next thing I really remember was being in a foster care home, foster care family in Leicester. And boy, did they really beat the shit out of us. I can only speak about me. My twin sister is not here, does she? And she doesn't deal with her stuff. So I just deal with mine. So I remember them beating the shit out of me till I pissed myself on the floor and they made me lick it up like a dog. I remember them putting a cigarette out on my face, and I still got the scar underneath my chin on my right hand side. I remember them giving us a bath and ducking our heads under the water and lots of laughter from the two sons. I remember, but not with the clearest of memories, but I remember sexual abuse. That's where I think that is probably my first memory of child sexual abuse. And as I said, I don't remember how old I was, probably 5, 6. I know we were with the Colliers, Mr. and Mrs. Collier in Kent, when we were at primary school, very young. And I remember being with these people in Leicester whose name I do not ever remember, was being shortly afterwards. And from there, we went back home. And the reason we left there is going back a little bit. I remember my sister had left, and I don't know if she was ill or in hospital or what had happened to her, but I was by myself. My twin sister had gone, and I was there by myself for a little while. The incidents at this home must have been so bad. I remember sleeping in a bath, in a cold bath with a dog's blanket, because I wet the bed. I wet the bed from being around my mum, because she was, I suppose you could say, narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
And really didn't like me, or I felt like she didn't like me, and would beat me a lot. So I had this history of wetting the bed anyway. And so in this foster care home, I remember sleeping in a bath, in a cold bath with a dog's blanket. I don't remember how I knew it was a dog's blanket, but I can smell it still now. These people were extremely abusive. They were racially, physically, and sexually abusive. And I only actually connected with the sexual abuse from this particular family just a couple of years ago. Still very fresh. And I was in a program for recovery at the time. That's where that came from. And we were taken away from there. As I said, it was a private, this is the thing. These foster care experiences at the beginning of my life, or our life as twins, were private foster care. It was done in the Nigerian community, mainly the Yoruba. Don't hear many Igbo people that did that to their children, but mainly Yoruba people did that with their children, came here, didn't know these white people from jack shit, and put their kids with trash. Now, they were doing their best. I know they thought they were doing their best for us. So I'm trying to reel it in, you know, having, you know, some trying to have some kind of understanding for what happened. They were wanting the best. And I guess they came here to white England and found out that white people wanted to foster their children. They thought it was a loving gesture if they just did that and paid them, but it was just the money. They didn't see that these white people didn't like us. They didn't understand racism. Of course, coming from a black African country where you have black doctors, black lawyers, black everything, you know, you're not, you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth there already. You've already got a good sense of yourself and who you are and what you look like. So when you come here and the colonizer culture, you know, white people want to take care of your children, you just pay them a bit. It's a bit like the extended system that we have in Nigeria, where you have your children and they go straight to the grandmother, or the grandmother's in the house with you, the grandparents, you know, you're still living in the compound with your grandparents, or the grandparents are living in your compound, and everybody takes care of each other. So I think that they felt it was just an extension of that. However, there were very many people of that of my generation of that time, and probably for the next generation also, that suffered and still today don't talk about it enough. I do, but in general. So I think from there, we were taken away from that particular home in Middle England, Leicester. at that time, as I said, it wasn't social services that was involved. It was the private thing. So I believe that neighbours were complaining. Maybe people at school were complaining. You know, when you keep, one of the things I understood about later on, you know, very short while after that experience, being in children's homes under the local authority, there was lots of child sexual abuse there. It was rampant. It was really rampant. And me and my sister were the only black children there consistently. So, of course, that happened to us quite a lot, because I guess they used to fetishize our genitals. What was I going to say? Jesus, it's gone right out of my head. Anyway, one of the things is we were removed from that foster care place. And then we were at home for a very short period of time.
You're going to say, one of the things that you realized, you didn't realize it until later on. What was that about? How people found out that you were being abused?
Yeah,
by that first family. What was the cue, and what tipped off who, and what authorities? Is there anybody you can trust in this damn freaking society that placed upon, or what? What happened?
Well, there wasn't, because we were privately fostered.
I see.
There wasn't, the local authority wasn't involved, so the social services were not involved. So what happened is they got involved because maybe neighbours were speaking to them, the school was speaking to them, and here we go, that's what I was saying. One of the things that I recognise now as an adult is that I speak for myself, I must have been acting out sexually. I know that when I went to a children, so say that we were six then, went back home to live with our parents in Hackney in London. We went back to live with our parents in Hackney in London. And shortly after that, my parents must have split up. They did split up. Went home one day. My dad had took everything out of the house. He took everything. And he didn't take me. And I was a daddy's girl out of the twins. I was my daddy's favorite. And he didn't take me. And I didn't see him for a long time after that. But one of the things I knew is that my mum went through some stuff after that, because I remember being at meetings with her, and, you know, she was surrounded by white people, and it felt very much still to this day that she was having to defend herself. And at some point we were, I don't know if we were taken away from her, but we were placed in care. And I don't know if she gave us up or we were taken away from her, possibly taken away from her. I don't know what was going on with my mom.
And this is after you had already been abused by that first private foster care?
Yes.
So, let me ask you this. Your parents, I'm assuming, where were they? Like, in terms of, I know they put you in this, like, were they in a different state or something like that? Where were they? Like, where were they physically during that time?
In the same place. In England, you know, and they were in England. When we were fostered out.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, were you over at the foster care for like a weekend or for weeks or for months until you saw your parents again? Or what was that? You know what I'm trying to say? What was the frequency of seeing your parents?
I don't even remember. I just remember we used to see them. They used to come. They used to pop in and pop out again. I don't remember. All I remember is that we were placed in these foster care private arrangement. We were going to school, because I told you the first parents who treated us better, you know, the teacher, the nursery, whoever she was, squeezing my hand, smiling to the class, but squeezing my hand like she wanted to break my bones. And then the second one, where the abuse was terrible, it was the second one. I remember it being after that. I don't remember a thing. The trauma has taken everything out of my brain. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any school. All I remember is being beaten. All I remember is being a little, very little girl. I'm only 5'1" now. I was a very little girl being beaten, being on the floor, having to lick up my urine because I pissed myself with being beaten so much. I remember having my head dunked in the bath up and down as if they tried to drown me. I remember them putting a cigarette out on my face, underneath my chin on my right hand side. And I don't remember, but I know for a fact that there was sexual abuse, and it was probably so much that I just don't remember.
And this is the first family.
This is the second family.
This is the second family. So the first family abused you, and then the second family abused you as well.
No, the first family were okay.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't remember any abuse.
Gotcha.
No abuse.
So this is the second family.
Family and both families, I remember my parents in and out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember them, you know, I just remember
I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to understand, like, I mean, I know you're young. I'm not, you know, I'm not blaming you for not telling your parents, but I'm saying, like, your parents, there was no clues that your parents would have picked up on.
Even if there were clues, they didn't want to see them. They believed that white people were the right people.
I get you. This is like some naive, and I've heard about this, and this is like some naive African mindset that white people are superior, essentially. Yes. That they're not just superior in terms of what they have, but they're actually morally superior. Morally superior. And that, I've heard about that. And this is, I hear you. And unfortunately, you paid the price for the ignorance and naivety of your parents.
Yes, definitely, darling. Because after that, when we did return home, as I was saying, I remember a series of meetings, because Hackney, in which is London, East London, is the only place I could say I could really call home, because I was like a gypsy as a child. We were like gypsies. We moved all over the place, whether it was a private, and then we went back home. My parents split up around about the age of 7, and then we went into local authority care. And we went back into rural England. So both those places that we were in when we were little were in rural England. They were outside of London where we were born. And then we went back in and out of foster care, the private sector, back to mummy and daddy, then back to private foster care again. And so I remember being in Kent and I remember being in Leicester. But according to my sister, who was closer to my mum because she lived at home later on with my mum and I didn't, my mum apparently said that we started off in Ilford Barking in a foster carer's place when we were babies, and we were also in Brighton, or Brighton then Barking or something like that. So it was what they were doing from when we were babies, from when we were really small. So there you go. So for me, then when we returned after that violent experience, there was must have been stuff going on. I remember being at meetings with my mum and local, you know, white people that felt like, I can still see it now, like she's surrounded by vultures who are picking at her, at her culture, at the way she talks, at the way she smells, at the way she, you know, everything at that time in the 60s, they just thought we were, you know, it was really awful. And so we were taken away from her. I know we were latchkey kids at one point, latchkey kids being that my parents were working, or my mum definitely was working. We had the key around our neck and we'd go inside to the little basement that we were living in, and she'd leave our food wrapped up for us so that we could have something to eat, etc., etc. We had to take care of ourselves very young. But I think they took us away and we went into local authority care. We went back into rural England, and the first children's home that we went into at 7 years old, from the very first night, sexual abuse began, and it was actually a paedophile ring. It wasn't a children's home, it was a paedophile ring. And it was, and that was very traumatic.
All right. Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm an empath, so I'm feeling all this, you know, from you, and I'm picking up on it. You know, and I'm like shaking. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, I'm like, that's just like me loving you, and, you know, and just having to hear you go through this. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, it makes me livid. And, you know, but before you even continue, I want to say this, because I think you messaged me on Facebook earlier and you were saying something about, you know, something about forgiving white people, or how can I forgive white people or for and what happened? fuck forgiveness. You know what forgiveness is? Forgiveness is letting them go. You know what I'm trying to say? That's not, you're here for only, you're here to do two things: know yourself and to know your creator. You know what I'm trying to say? And that's the only one you need to serve. That's it. That's it. And you're doing that. That's it. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. You didn't do anything wrong. You know what I'm trying to say? You were born into the you were born into this world, an innocent young child. You know what I'm trying to say? And you were taken advantage of by savages. You know what I'm trying to say? That's it. That's it. It's that simple. You know what I'm trying to say? Unfortunately, because we have emotions, and our emotions, you know, run rampant with inside of us, and, you know, it's like you're trying to make sense of it all. But you don't. There's nothing to make sense of. You know, I'll make sense of it metaphysically. I'm trying to say, sure. But in terms of these people, they're savages. They're animals. They only exist.
Okay, then.
They only exist. Listen. They only exist within this world. They only exist within this world. Right. They hate you. They hate black people because they were created on this earth, and we fell from the eternal into this world. It's their job to abuse you, to keep your vibration low, to keep you from coming from a place of self-love, so you never vibrate to the point where you can release yourself from this world, and by doing so, destroy the only world that they exist in. Does that make sense?
Okay. It makes a whole heap of sense. But then what is my conflict? My conflict is, what is my conflict?
Because your conflict is you need to be told. You need to be, no. Fuck white people. You can hate white people. Who gives a fuck? You hate white people. Guess what? Join the fucking billions of other people who have common sense. Okay. Fuck that. Who cares? Who doesn't hate white people? It's not about that. What you need to be told is that there's nothing wrong with you. You didn't do anything wrong. You know, you're loved. You are a child of God. You're loved. That's it. That's what you need to be told. And I'm telling you right now that that's what you are. Don't, you know what I'm trying to say? Fuck, you know, don't, you're bigger than your experiences. You're bigger than your traumas. You know what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. And you have the right to live a life in peace and to have your love shine. Mm-hmm. And what they wanted from you is to take that from you. That's what they wanted from you, because they don't have souls themselves, and so they try and make God within you fearful, and then they try and feed from that fear. You know what I'm trying to say? That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. You're not from this world, and you will return to where you came from, eternity.
Yeah, I think. I've got to get to, you know, what you're saying is spot on. There is this part inside of me that feels that because I'm an empath and because I've worked on healing this, and I'm like 54 now, and I'm like, you're one day. Should I still be full of so much resent? How can I live in it peacefully? But I think maybe it's just having to accept some of the things that you've just said, that we're not of the same cloth at all. Those of us with melanin and those of us who lack it, we're not of the same cloth. But I need to find peace in myself because I'm angry. Maybe what I'm angry at is, I don't even know.
Yeah, let me just say this. It's not... it's not that simple where everybody that's pale is evil and everybody that's dark is good. It's not that simple. But at the same time, like, you know, speaking in terms of the larger European culture, it's a culture of vampirism. You know what I'm trying to say? Within there, there might be some decent people. You know what I'm trying to say? But it's like, yes. Muhammad Ali said it best. You know, if there was a door, right? Behind that door, there was you know, poisonous snakes, you know, 80%. And maybe there's, you know, a smaller number of non-poisonous snakes, right? And those and some of those non-poisonous snakes want to help me, right? Do I open the door to the poisonous snakes and expect the non-poisonous snake to hold them back, or do I just shut the door? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's what you do. You shut the door. And so what you exactly? That doesn't mean you be mean. It doesn't mean you harbor resentment, because what you have to understand is as a metaphysician, as an occultist, right? That hatred is a polarity of love. So even to hate someone is still giving them your energy, still giving them your attention, still giving them a purpose in your life. And as long as they have a purpose, right, they have a reason to exist within your life. And they have a grasp on you.
How do I not hate them? Well, how do I not hate them? Because I feel
so... Listen, I'll tell you. Here's how you not hate them. You not hate them by hating them you hate them to the highest degree that you can hate them. That's how you hate them. And once you've hated them to the point where you've hated them enough and you've burnt out your hatred within them, and to the point, you know what I'm trying to say? Then...
it's what's happening now.
And that's okay. Mm-hmm. What it is listen, as a metaphysician, the law of rhythm, right? The thing is, like, you have to, you know, everything has its poles, you know, so you have to have that pendulum swing all the way to the highest of its axis. And if you don't acknowledge that and you keep that pent up, then you're never going to be able to, you know, come to a place where you can be centered again. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So let that pendulum swing all the way and experience that rage. If you want, exactly. So if you need to say fuck white people, say fuck white people. You know what I'm trying to say?
You know what?
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you know what? You've just hit the nail on the head. I'm really, I guess what I'm saying, I'm like, I understand where you're coming from, and it is true. I think that, oh God, I can't. It's like, oh God,
you haven't allowed yourself to grieve.
You know what? I think I started this journey of healing a long time ago, left the care system and almost immediately got pregnant, and then got pregnant again another 2.5 years later, mm-hmm. and found myself sitting down in front of a therapist for proper, you know, therapy that wasn't white centered. It was more centered around, you know, me being an African. So I started this journey 30 something years ago. I've been in and out of therapy. And I don't think I've ever addressed my hatred properly for white people, because each time I address it, I feel like it's subdued by, oh, you know, you can't hate, and no, not that. All people, exactly white it. People are bad, and not, and there, and that's where I'm coming from, because I've been given that message so many times.
They made you feel guilty.
Like, oh, not all white people. Yeah. Fuck even that. People that look like me.
Exactly. That's because they're still programmed to see the white man as their fucking God. They're still programmed to see the white man as their God. And that's not their God. That's their ruler at this present time. You know what I'm trying to say? That's not their God. He'll be destroyed too. Along with this universe. So that's why I have to go into life coaching, because you cannot, until you have an understanding, an occult understanding of this world, you do not have the full range of tools to heal people, especially African people who are a spiritual people, who are a holistic people. So unfortunately, you know, you've been raised by white people, and so, you know, when they're paying your bills, or when you're having to pay your bills to them, I'm trying to say, you know, when you got your degree from them, you know, you begin to think like them. You know what I'm trying to say? You begin to unfortunately have your mind. They've already colonized, you know, most of our lands. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
But unfortunately, but a lot of people don't realize is that they've also colonized our minds. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Everything. Yep.
And our hearts and minds. Yep. So you have to decolonize yourself in order to be yourself. You know what I'm trying to say? And when you find who yourself is, and you allow your cup to fill up for who you are outside of any other person or culture or peoples, then when you found that self-love, then if you want to, you can give love to others. You know what I'm trying to say? It's up to people to find love within themselves. God, the potential of God to be in your life is within everybody. So you don't have to, it's not a matter of you liking people or loving people. They can find that within themselves, can't they?
Yeah, for real. Honestly, I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. I think I've got to work through this whole thing of, how can I put it? You know, that I need to forgive them. I need to forgive myself. And not even forgive myself. I need to nurture myself. Correct. Not forgive myself.
Yes, exactly.
I didn't create any of that. Correct. It was systematic. It was part of everything that I went through as a kid. Was part of a bigger system, but it did happen to me, so I can connect with that. I am. Oh God, the pain.
Yes, but again, you just said it, pain. Pain.
Listen.
Yeah, go ahead.
Listen. When I say the pain, it's what I was trying to post. I need to get to the nitty gritty of what we're talking about, because I feel like a lot of the stuff that you said is so on point, and it's definitely what I know. And I'm really grateful you brought it up today in the way that you did. But I need to deal with talking about the after effects of the abuse, just like, you know, the vlog that you made regarding child abuse and the physical child abuse.
Yes.
Or, it's really hard. Sorry, hold on a minute.
It's okay, sis. It's not a problem. We'll take a couple of deep breaths, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Take a couple of deep breaths, sis. It's okay.
About 7 years old, I can see myself in this particular children's home in rural England, and each Saturday we'd get a little bit of pocket money, and from 7 years old, perhaps younger, but definitely remember 7 years old, I remember getting my pocket money and running down to the post office, the one shop in the village, and buying sweets. And what I was doing, I recognize now in hindsight, was trying to sweeten the experience that I was experiencing every day, having to do oral sex on people, grown people. Some of them, like I'm 7 years old, some of the boys were 15. I was raped by a fully grown man, men, as well as a little girl too. So sweets became my safe haven. Sugar became my safe haven. I think I spent my whole lifetime, or half of my lifetime as an adult, trying to give up sugar. I mustn't eat sugar. I shouldn't eat sugar. It's so bad to me. Oh my God, it's going to kill me. I'm going to die. I'm going to have, you know, if I don't stop eating sugar, I smoked weed, and it took me some time to give that up. I don't say that I've given it up completely. I still feel that there's an issue with it. God, I don't even know how to say what I'm trying to say.
I understand. Want me to help you out, or you want to continue?
I just want to say one thing, that I feel like I'm incredibly hard on myself. I'm grateful. Many of the people that I went into care with, or I was in care with, are either dead or they're really strung up on hardcore drugs. Sugar to me and weed is my hardcore drug. I'm conflicted because I know that my spirit, that those that walk with me in spirit really want to connect with me. And I feel like I use my sugar and the smoking of weed as a barrier. I want to stop it and put it down so that I can be more open to the spirit that's around me. And I have done it. I stopped smoking weed for years, and I still had the fear of letting go or being open to spirit. This is really hard. I can't even talk anymore.
It's okay.
Let
me help you out.
Please.
So
please, please.
It's not a matter of number. All right. Number one. Again, I just want to go back and just, cause there's you are harboring guilt. You are as if it was your fault. You know what I'm trying to say? I want to number one, address that. You know, like there's nothing wrong with you. You know what I'm trying to say? You're in a sick ass fucking world. You're in a sick ass world with sick ass people. You need to hate. You need to hate them. They're savages and they'll be destroyed. Understand that there is justice in this world, and it's not coming through no damn white man. There is going to be justice. I just want to say that before I continue. So that's going to happen. And what I'm doing in life, and what, you know, metaphysics. This is about destroying this world. This is about ending this universe. This is ultimately what it's about. In order to do that, we have to heal ourselves, and like in the ancient Egyptian book I think it's called the Judgment Scene, or Book of the Dead. I'll look it up later on. But they have a iconography of a heart, a human heart being weighed next to a feather, right? And so we have to be able to by going through this all these pains that we've gone through as spiritual beings or souls encompassed in a shell, right? We have to be able to get past what the shell has gone through in order to know that you haven't been touched. Who you are is not who you're calling yourself. It's not who you're looking at right now. It's not the feelings that are in your nervous system right now. What you are is beyond that. You know what I'm trying to say? You are a spiritual being or a soul encompassed in a shell. Your shell was touched. Your shell was molested. Mm-hmm. Your shell was beaten. You know what I'm trying to say? But they never got to you. They never got to you.
Yeah.
They never got to you. They can't get to you. They want, that's their job, to try and convince you that the flesh that you're encompassed in is you. It's not you. So
yeah.
Moving on to the next part. The need for sugar I find is the need for love and comfort. You know what I'm trying to say? You weren't getting that. And so that's where you went to. And that's understandable. You know what I'm trying to say? You don't need to the feelings of guilt that you feel when you have it now, because you know that you're suppressing these emotions. You're no longer suppressing these emotions anymore. We're talking about it now openly. So that's okay. By you speaking right now, you are currently in the process of healing, right? So this guilt stuff, this will end. And in terms of marijuana, it's not about smoking it. If you were smoking it and meditating and actively working on healing your heart, that'd be fine. But the thing is, again, you're using it as a tool of suppression, but that's okay. There's nothing to suppress when you realize that you're not guilty, right? There's nothing to suppress when you realize you haven't done anything wrong. You haven't done anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. You're loved. You understand?
Yes.
You're loved. Okay. There's nothing wrong with you. Nothing wrong with you.
To be honest with you, it's such a relief to talk.
Yes.
Because hearing what you're saying is correct. I have done nothing wrong.
You haven't.
The way I've connected with the weed today is not the same way that I connected with it 20 years ago, 30 yes. years ago when I came to the care system. It was a crutch I used then. Today, I'm able to get up and meditate. I'm able to get up and do my little ritual practices today. I'm able to recognize when you talk about weighing the heart and the feather and Anubis in the book of coming forth by day, I can recognize all these things because I've studied and I've, and the weed hasn't blocked me in that way. But I still feel that because what you're saying now, it makes more sense that I haven't accepted, I've taken on the guilt, that I find anything to beat myself up with. So, okay, I haven't. I've got a life where I've had some challenges. I've got through those challenges, blah, blah, this, that, and the other. So I'll find something to beat myself up with. It must be that I'm using the sugar. I can't be a blessed child if I'm using sugar and weed. Yes. I'm still telling myself, I'm still believing what those white people did that raped the fuck out of me, excuse my expression, that raped the hell out of me, that I am not good enough. I am just not good enough. I have to find something to beat myself up with. Correct. And you know what? We've got to, this is the time now. It's come to the fore. Because this is the time now. What my spirit told me about 4 weeks ago was I woke up and I heard clearly to embrace the good, the bad, and the ugly, and that I am about to enter an era where all that I have done will serve you. And that was powerful to me. And I was getting lots of other little messages, about my spirit, and I've even to them show me how to step up. So what am I doing now? I'm I'm sabotaging.
So they come in.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm sabotaging. I'm finding things like the sugar, the weed, or whatever else it is to beat myself up, to say that I'm not worthy, because there's still this little injured girl inside that was beaten, that was bruised, that was forced to have sex, that was forced to do some really degrading things. And it went through not just me. Actually, sex has been such an issue in my childhood and my young adulthood, such a terrain of abuse. I have been physically celibate for almost 3 years. I'm really proud of myself of that, because I definitely was a sex addict, you could say then. If you have a sexual abuse as something that you're raised on, then for me that was my that's one of the effects, that's one of the manifestations, that I went out as a young adult looking for love through sex, just like the film Mr. Goodbye. I looked for love, but I didn't know how to get it because I didn't know how to maintain it. I mean, the biggest love of my life, who was my father, decided that he was leaving my mum and he was leaving his children too. And he took everything. He took my heart with him. And then, the rape that had already started that I wasn't conscious of at that time when I was seven, continued to get worse with child sexual abuse when I went back into care. So, of course, I've never known how to love. But something that's happening in my life now, I don't know, so many things are coming to the surface, but all I really resonate with right now and with what you're saying is that I need to embrace everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because Correct. It will serve me. It's serving me.
It will. It will. And just from more perspective, metaphysically, you know, speaking about, I think it's called like the 42 negative confessions.
Yes.
You know, in there it says, you know, I have not stolen. I have not committed adultery. I have not this. I have not that. For you, it could be, you know, I have not been touched. I have not been harmed. You know, meaning that. If you look at the surface of those, it looks just like the Ten Commandments or the Ten Commandments are taken from them. But if you realize what it's really trying to say metaphysically is that all these things you have not done. Why? Again, because you are a soul encompassed in a body that is finite and that has passed away before and will pass away, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's why this, you know, like you know, now with that said, like just knowing that intellectually is still not enough to heal. You know what I'm trying to say? Like yes. you still have to do the inner work, you know what I'm trying to say? But luckily, you know, you have, you know, through your pain, you've done enough transmutation to come and find wisdom and be able to use that, you know, on your path to healing. And through your healing, we all heal. Because think of how many, like you said, think of how many other children went through that care system and were raped and were beaten and are either dead or in probably maybe in other abusive relationships or strung out somewhere, right? Yeah. So yeah. You are not just the strongest of, you know, within your family, but you are also the strongest of a whole generation of trauma that has gone through this process of basically, you know, being taken advantage of by monsters, you know, with their family members, being unfortunately, I would have to say willfully ignorant, you know, or brainwashed.
Yeah.
You know?
That's real.
Yeah.
For real. I mean, it's really funny because my mom died 29 years ago this year in June. And I think the biggest part of it is that I wouldn't say to you I feel no connection with her. I love her. She's my mom. So I have this feeling of love for her. But as close as she is to me now, even more than when she was alive, I don't really relate to her very well. I don't hate her. I'm not sure if I could act. Yeah, I guess I do love her. Oh, God.
It's okay.
I recognize when she died, clearly 29 years ago, that my relationship with her now could be greater at that time when she died. Now where I am 29 years later, I'm like, well, I speak to my ancestors, but my mum is not always first on the list. My father's still alive. My mum's just not first on the list. When I speak, I do actually, you know, it's a lie in a way, because when the shit hits the fan, I'm like, oh, mummy, you know, she's the first person I call. But I still don't really have this connection with my mum. I have more of a connection with my grandmother, who is her mum, but I had that connection with her, I think I said before, from the time I was very, very young. I used to, whenever we were at home in between nannies, what they call foster carers, I'd look at my grandmother's picture as a little girl and talk to her, or without opening my mouth, she'd talk to me and I'd talk to her. And when I met her years later, when we went back to Nigeria to bury my mum, take her body back and bury her, you know, the connection was there instantly. And when she died, the same year that my last one was born in 2000, she came straight to me to shower me with love. My grandmother, this is, to shower me with love. Mm. Really, I see my mum in dreams. If there's any reason that I need to, information real quick that she needs me to get, my mum will come up in dreams, but then so will my grandma. And whenever I see mediums, they talk about my grandma a lot. So, like, well, I guess what I'm trying to say, there is forgiveness. And there is this real potential that I have been using to build a relationship with my mum. I feel she's very much with me, very much with me all the way. But it's almost like she'll take a back seat. Because she knows, you know, that I'm working on forgiving, not forgiving, because I have, or maybe I haven't forgiven. Yeah, letting go. Yes. And letting go. But she's still very much a part of me, but she's kind of like in the background. When I start talking ancestral stuff and talking to my ancestors and conversing with them, she's not the first person I called.
Do you feel guilty about that?
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yes, again, that feeling of guilt, you know, that does, again, yeah. That you don't need to have that there either. Because it's not only affecting, this is affecting, you know, obviously your eating habits, you know, your health, your anxiety, but also now it's affecting your spiritual practice, you know, that.
Yes.
Even when you speak to me, sometimes you apologize for saying fuck. You know what I'm trying to say? No. You were raped as a child and they made you perform oral sex. Who fucking cares? Listen, this is a thing. When you really want to delve deep into the occult world, you have to understand, like, I've listened to people like Bobby Hemmett. I'm here to destroy this universe, okay? That's what I'm here for. So saying fuck in a world that, you know what I'm trying to say, is going to be destroyed, does it really matter in hindsight? You know what I'm trying to say? Like,
yeah,
you know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. So in order to be free, you know what I'm trying to say? In order to be free, you need to be your authentic self. You know what I'm trying to say? Your 100% authentic self. Yes. Again, the good, the bad, the ugly, right?
Ugly.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Embrace that.
And also, I'm reaching for my authentic self. There's no doubt in my mind that I'm. Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay? Hello?
Yes, I was saying, I was saying that, you know what, right now, it's definitely, I feel clear right now. I need to be in a place where I felt all of this, the guilt and all the other crap that's gone with it. I needed to, because this is a serious part of my life now that major reflection is in my face. So the guilt that I felt, which, you know, is authentic, even though it's not it's an authentic feeling, although, you know, really, do I need to be guilty? Yeah, right now I need to have that in my face. I need to let it go. I need to embrace it, actually.
Yes, you gotta acknowledge it. It's not gonna go away if you you know, that's the thing. I was speaking to this other sister about, you know, acknowledging pain, you know, because if you ignore it, that means that it's more powerful than you, right?
Yeah.
And and if you have the seed of the eternal within you, you know what I'm trying to say? You cannot face something that is finite, then what does that say? You know what I'm trying to say? So obviously, you know, if we are who we say we are, then we have to be able to conquer the things, the obstacles of this matrix that are put in our path. You know, if only in our minds. You know what I'm trying to say? Because ultimately, like I put it, like, you know, this universe is mental anyway. So, you know, by going back, have you ever seen the movie The Butterfly Effect?
No, I haven't even seen The Matrix.
Okay, well,
I've got The Matrix on DVD.
Listen, this is your homework. You need to find the movie The Butterfly Effect. You need to watch that movie. If you need, I'll get it for you and I'll upload it and I'll send you a link. Okay.
Oh, please. Yes, please
I'll do that. I'll do
yes,
that because please. that movie is so impactful, especially for you. In that movie, you know, basically it talks about the cause and effect and basically going back and doing the mental work. This guy, he sees his best friend being sexually abused by her father, you know, and made to make these kind of movies. And you know, he basically goes back in, I don't know, almost like a, some kind of dream realm or some alternative universe. And he kind of, you see it play out if he were to do things differently. You know what I'm trying to say? And ultimately, and it's a beautiful story, you know, and it really talks about trauma and how if it's unresolved, how it can affect people their entire lives. And you see based upon the actions that people take, what, you know, not the actions of, how can I put it, not the actions of what other people have done to them, but how they respond and how that, you know. So he goes back in the movie, and as a young child, he goes with his understanding that he has now as a man, right? And he goes and he fucking yells and tells off this fucking dude that fucking molested his friend. You know what I'm trying to say? And it was gonna have him molest his friend. You know what I'm trying to say? So like, and he yells at this man, this pedophile, in a way that, even though he's a child, the experience that he has as a man and the confidence he has as a man allowed him to do it with a sense that he's not afraid of anything. You know what I'm trying to say? And that's what you need to do in your meditation. You need to go in and you need to fucking fight these people. You need to fucking destroy these people. You need to stab these people. You need to punch these people. You need to kick these people. You need to, whatever the fuck you need to do to have your spirit not be restrained. You know what I'm trying to say? By those who would prey upon you, right?
I need to go in. What I feel also that I need to do, I need to go in and find something also I need to sit down with my little girl inside.
Correct.
You know, I know she needs me. I also need to let myself know that it's okay that I eat sugar. That you know, I don't do massive amounts, but the very little that I do is okay. Look why I do it, and embrace it. The fact that, you know, I smoke, as I said, not massive amounts, you know, but that I do. I need to embrace that and be all right with it. I need to sit down and be all right with it, because it sounds silly, but if I don't, it stifles me. I'm not able to reach my authentic self because I'm bothering about something that's on the periphery, on the surface, and it's got nothing to do with me. I didn't make that happen.
Yeah, I hear you. But I hear you. But again, even like we said earlier, the weed smoking and the sugar addiction, there's people that haven't been raped and molested and physically abused, right? That have weed addictions and that have sugar addictions, right? And they don't have the guilt that you have regarding that. So what it is you're only using that, right? You're only using that so you can avoid having to go in and deal with the real underlying issue. So we don't need to talk about that. That's you know, sis, listen. I'm a man that, you know, if you were my daughter, you wouldn't have the experience that you had. You know what I'm trying to say? And let me tell you right now, me hearing this as a man that you were molested and raped and physically abused, you know what I'm trying to say, when your parents were willfully oblivious, that makes me livid. So you don't need to talk about fucking smoking weed. I just smoked weed a minute ago, okay? You know, okay. Listen, I eat fucking sugar. I'm half Puerto Rican. So listen, in Puerto Rico, we drink sugar cane like it's fucking lemonade up in this bitch. So I don't fucking want to hear about some goddamn fucking smoking weed. Okay, you're good.
No, you're right. No, you're not, sweetheart. You are so right. I'm using it. Yes. I know I'm using it.
You are.
Avoid.
Again.
Oh my God.
You're loved.
Liberate.
Say that. Just say that. I'm loved. Just please say it for me so I can hear it one time, please. I'm loved.
I am loved.
You're loved.
I am loved.
You're loved.
Loved, and I love. Yes.
You're loved, sis. You need to know that. You're loved. Once you know that, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, once you know that, everything else will fall into place. Once you're truly walking authentically in your spiritual path, the rest of the things in life will fall into place.
Do you know what? One more thing. That they're calling me. I'm really being called. Let me tell you. I am being called to step the fuck up, really, spiritually. They're really showing me what to do. I'm having dreams where they're saying, hey, you know, Elegwa, you know, Elegbara, we call him Eshu in the Yoruba culture. And, and I know he's called the same many names, different paths, same deity, deity of the gateways. Calling me, showing me in dreams what to do. And I'm still here fearful because I haven't stepped spiritually into my authentic self wholeheartedly. I'm still using fear and guilt. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, right, today I feel better that I had this. It is good to talk, and you can share this, because if it helps just one single person, as it's helping me right now, that's a gift. That's a gift of life.
Absolutely. It's a blessing.
Gift. Yes. A gift of a blessing, a gift of life. Something, I don't know, has shifted. But you know what? It has been shifting, because another conversation that we will have hopefully later, Louis, is that I've been, you know, that they've been calling me to step up for a long time. I have a son who I will repeat, because sometimes I have to hear it myself and hear other people hear that I am raising a son that was, before he was conceived, I was called to raise him. So that means for me, I had I'm a dreamer, very much so. And I had information about my son before he was conceived. And then when he was conceived, I had warnings that I'd better not abort this child, because if I do, it won't be his life that will be lost, because he'll come back to someone else. But my life would be finished. You know, literally, they would take me out if I aborted him. And then his name came through in a dream. And then by the time I was heavily pregnant, 3 weeks away from delivery, then I was starting to get, they started to tell me how that he was going to be born disabled. And that has been an 18-year journey, which is now not coming to an end. But what is happening now, after 18 years of serious uphill challenges, where my son nearly lost his life, all kinds of things have happened, all kinds of treachery from social services, not supporting me properly. So the first time ever I have this solicitor, this Colombian solicitor, who is kicking fucking ass, so that I now don't have to be doing all of this work mainly by myself. I've had a team who've helped me to support my son for a good couple of years now, 3 years, but I've got now I have all this time, because I wake up in the morning now. I don't have to get up and do anything, or I'd still have to do quite a lot of his cooking, because he has a very pure diet. He can't eat anything processed. So I'm still responsible for doing all the cooking. But just to suffice it to say, to brush over the surface, I have had so much of my time freed up just recently. And that is why all of this stuff is coming through for me to start. No, to step up with my processing. Mm-hmm. So to talk to you today, as always, Louis, is a real pleasure. It's helping me to understand that this is a process. I feel very weepy right now, very tearful, very celebratory. I'm hearing big time spirit telling me, look at ways how to celebrate your life. Look at how to celebrate where you've been and what you've been through. Start opening up to celebrating your life. So I know that's something that I'm being called to do too. I'm stepping up, and just hearing you today, I really don't know how. I do know how to go in deep inside myself, but I don't really know how to do that without fear. But I feel somehow today something has shifted, and I'm finding my way. I also have a fantastic art therapist. There's a sister from Jamaica, of Jamaican heritage, you know, so she looks like me, and we resonate. So that also is helpful.
Beautiful. But honestly, beautiful. Thank you. That's gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Let me ask you this: that sister that had that last interview with, I knew you were, I mean, I just felt when I heard her talk, I was like, oh man, I said you're gonna like this, you're gonna like hearing this. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't know, I just feel like you two are like kindred spirits or something like that, you know? Like,
yeah. Yep.
Did you guys? Yep. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
I do. I mean, I listened to the first one, and then I realized this morning, I think, or yesterday night, when I was flicking through, that there's some more of it. Mm-hmm. But I don't sit down and do those things lightly. I sit down and listen to them properly when I have the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be making the time later today to sit down and listen to the rest. But straight away, when I heard her, I felt a connection. I felt a serious connection. Serious connection with her experiences, and I felt really enlightened, and yeah, there's something really deep in what you're doing, Louis, and you know, I feel really honored is not the word, but it is. I feel grateful to be a part of it, because it's not just about, you know, helping others, it's about helping myself right now. And as I said, if helping myself helps one other person, that is a gift, as you said, a blessing, as you said.
That's it. That's the mindset to have. And I'm having to remind myself that as well. You know what I'm trying to say? Because when you when you do something purely out of love, you know what I'm trying to say? And you know, it's not like, you know, if, like I said earlier, like, you know, I've been blessed to be put in a position where I don't have to, like, you know, get up every day and work a 9-to-5 job. You know what I'm trying to say? So I have lots of free time, and I don't have to work if I didn't want to the rest of my life. You know what I'm trying to say? So it's like, I don't have to, you know, worry about money. You know what I'm trying to say? So, I mean, although I'm intelligent enough that I could make money, you know what I'm trying to say? But the point I'm trying to make is that, like, when I create, when I create this platform and I'm creating these videos, I know that I'm not getting, because I'm putting African, you know, Afro empath something, you know, just because I'm focusing on our people, you know what I'm trying to say, and what our pains, that automatically limits my earning potential, you know what I'm trying to say, in terms of my audience. But it's not about that. I'm working for the spirit world. I know that I'm finite, you know what I'm trying to say? And my experiences are finite, and you know, so I'm working for the eternal. I'm working for the afterlife, right? And that's what you have to remember. I'm trying to say, no matter what you go through, who you perceive yourself to be, and what you perceive yourself to go through, and I meditate. You know, I'm meditating to deal with my own pains. You know what I'm trying to say, my own hurts that I've obviously received while in this world. You know, but I never intellectually forget that I'm not of this world, even though I'm, you know what I'm trying to say, in it, but not of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a thing. You asked earlier on Facebook about, you know, how to proceed in your spiritual path when you're afraid to take those first steps. Ultimately, you have to know that you're going to be supported. You know what I'm trying to say, by something that you cannot see, but you know, in your case, you're lucky because you actually have some auditory, you know, things that, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't have that. You know what I'm trying to say? I just have my intuition. You know what I'm trying to say, and what I feel. You know what I'm trying to say. And but you know, speaking to people like you is a blessing, and this Facebook group's a blessing because I get to speak to other people, so I don't feel alone in that process. You know. But like, you know, even before this was, I created this, like, I had to know that, like, how can I put it? I have to invest in my soul. You know, I have to invest in my spirit. You know what I'm trying to say? Because that's the only way I'm gonna find happiness. Because if I invest in the finite, if I invest in money, if I invest external love interest, you know what I'm trying to say? All those things can pass. You know what I'm trying to say? They're but finite. You know what I'm trying to say? You know?
Yeah.
My girlfriend can die of cancer, or get hit by a car. You know what I'm trying to say? And then if I built all my sorts of love around her, then when she's gone, then what am I left with? You know what I'm trying to say?
That's right.
So, you know, you have to go within and cultivate that little mustard seed within inside yourself. You know, cultivate that faith and become what you know. And I think that you and I, you know, and many others right now are being called to really, like, break free from what we've experienced. You know, the horrors that we've experienced while on this planet. You know, and really rise out of the ashes, something brand new.
I agree 100%. 100%. Thank you so much. That was just very useful to hear that. And I feel like that, something has opened, has shifted again for me. I just feel so much love at this moment, really. And I feel so much that I need to, that I can continue to cherish that little girl, and that I give thanks for the guidance that I do have. As you said, I have my dreams. I hear a lot, you know, and I'm grateful for the intuition. But now I say I'm grateful for the intuition. I don't think I've valued any of what I've just said enough. Even though I say I'm grateful for it, I've not valued any of it enough. Because of the past.
Yeah, because you're still, that's the thing. That's the thing. Like, intellectually, you can know something. You can know something in your head, but not experience it yet in your heart, right?
Heart. Exactly. That's right.
And so
that's the connection.
Yes, and that's why it's important to have an intellect about you, but you still have to, like, I'm going to be doing a series of meditation. I'm not sure how often do you meditate currently?
I used to do it every day religiously.
All right. Okay. All right. Stop right there. We're gonna have to go into this, because this is the key. This is the key. Because you
but
have
I don't
to.
Anymore, though.
I already know that. I knew that before you. Once I hear this. That's it. I don't want to hear anything else. Because listen, someone like you that's come from a past of trauma, you need to be meditating. If not every day, at least every other day. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, you need to, so you need to be on your regimen. That's crucial, because you've been programmed, right? You've been programmed to think you are nasty, you are shameful, you're this, you're that, you're a whore, you're a this, you know what I'm trying to say? You need to be able to go in and reprogram that. You know what I'm trying to say? You have the power to do that. But in order to do that, you need to use tools such as meditation, mantras. But I'm not big on mantras, but I meditation, that's my thing. You know what I'm trying to say? I can only say for what's worked for me. You know what I'm trying to say? And if you were drawn to me, then that's something that I think I can perhaps help you with and help other people with. And so that's what I'm trying to do, because that's as far as I know, and I can only speak from my experiences, that's how I've begin to reprogram myself, you know, and when I say reprogram, essentially what I've done is I've gone back and through dealing with the pain, and, you know, pain is like this. I like to think of when I meditate, right? Pain as like roots, right? Roots that have a grip on your nervous system. You know what I'm trying to say? And they're deep, deep, deep down there. You know, like, you know, if you ever pull weeds, like, you know, the root sometimes, you know, it can be that one little bit, last bit, that if you ignore it, that shit can grow back into a weed again. You know what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. So I'd like to envision burning roots. You know what I'm trying to say? Roots that are burning, like, you know, false things within inside me that have a grip over my being, my nervous system. You know what I'm trying to say? That keep my heart and my true love from shining, you know? And so, you know, once you deal with, for example, one emotion, maybe fear, you know, and maybe you've handled that for, you know, whatever issue it was, you know, it could be the fear of not being protected, your father leaving you, you know, then you can deal with, you know, another emotion, which is guilt. You know what I'm saying? And each one of these emotions has a pull. You know what I'm trying to say? Everything, you know, if you, I'm assuming you know the hermetic principles, everything has its poles, right? So you get to think of what you know, that you've, when you come out of a meditation and you've reached the opposite polarity of whatever that was, you know what I'm trying to say? Or you know, or I should say either the opposite polarity or at least being neutral, you know what I'm trying to say? You'll know that you've done it, that you've done whatever task of meditation for that session. When you've come out of it and that root is gone, you know what I'm trying to say? Even if it's a bit of it, then you'll go back and you'll take care of the rest of the root later on. But it's a continual process. You don't stop. As long as you're encased in a body, you have work to do, right?
You know what, Louis? 100%. I think where I am right now, I lost. This is it's quite a major thing I've been feeling recently, is that I couldn't have done without meditation in my life to get me to where I am now. But I think a series of events happened from 2014 onwards, which again is another story. And I had to, you know, I did a lot of fighting. I stepped up with my meditation, with my mantras, everything. And then what's happened, I guess, just recently after, well, not just recently, after all that happened, I've just kind of fallen off the wagon with meditation. I don't do it every day, like twice a day, like I used to. I don't use it as a tool as much anymore. Not that I don't ever use it, because I do. If I need something, really, to know something, really, that's what I do. But I've kind of fallen off the bandwagon, and this is part of what my practice needs to be now, getting back up on the bandwagon, because everything you said is right. My answers have always been there. For the very first time that I went for therapy when I was 20, 21, that's what I learned from therapy, from the therapist, is that, you know, the need to learn to be connected with my inner is through meditation. So everything you said is correct. I have to find my way back. And all I have been hearing this last few weeks or days that I've had to myself, because I've had some serious respite for 4 nights now. I've got another 2 more nights before the house, my house, becomes full again with my son and his support team who live here, basically. And I have just one room that is mine with my little prayer table. I am definitely... for me right now, when I think about the hardcore, I got to meditation, to a level of real hardcore meditation. To get back up there again, I don't know if I will, but I know that I know that I need to. But right now, what I do now is I light my candle. I will say a few words. I will do my prayer. I will write my journal. But meditation, to really sit with it, I ain't doing it right now, but I'm not doing it because I don't want to. I'm not feeling as connected. There you go.
You're not feeling as connected or you don't want to go inward and feel that pain.
Partly, but also partly that is true what you've just said, but also a huge part of that is I'm exhausted. I have a son who's born with Down syndrome, who's autistic, who is blind, who is epileptic, who has seizures in his sleep. I have only just now got the solicitor to kick ass enough to get the team to work with us 7 nights a week so that I'm not doing it. For 18 years, I've slept with one eye open, one eye closed, because this child, I haven't even listed all of his ailments, is a gift to me, because the way that they called his name in spirit and told me to call him this, I did. I got all that in a dream. I called him the name that spirit showed me. But it has been an uphill battle. My son has life-threatening conditions that still today, that I have a team, that I have them 24 hours, even though they're in the room with him, at any minute, my door goes bang, bang, bang. Yuande, Benga seizing. I come out of my room. I see my son struggling in a seizure, a fully blown catatonic one. And I'm like, it's surreal. I've got to go and call the ambulance. He gets over it quicker than me. That child is so resilient and loved. He bounces back. It's taking me. So I've got these years of getting back up after being knocked down so many times and having my child as something that keeps knocking me down, not him physically and me getting back up, but with his conditions, it's work. And as I said, it's another story. If I tell you the story about how my son came to me, it's a complete different story. But this is an uphill struggle. I don't often have a lot of energy. I don't, but I know that I have to start. I have got to go back because I did it. I used to meditate. My life was meditating and journaling. My life was so rich from meditating. So your life is rich.
Yes, I got you. I get you. But I hear you. But here's my thing. And I'll put you like this. You're breathing right now, correct?
Yes.
Right?
I know you. Yes.
Sis, you're not going to win with me. I'm sorry. But if you're breathing right now, right, because you have to breathe in order to keep your spirit and your soul on this planet, right? You can breathe deeper, can't you? Right now, can't you?
So
let's try that. Let's try that right now. Through your nose, hold it for a little bit, right, and let it out. There you go. Do it 2 more times. I'm gonna do it with you. Breathe in through your nose. One more time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and you can feel that. You can feel this peace, sister. This peace is your. This peace is your birthright. You can feel this peace anytime you want, my dear. Anytime you want.
Yeah.
Anytime you want. Anytime you want. It doesn't. There's. As long as you're breathing, my dear, right?
Yes.
You can breathe slowly. You can breathe with intention, right? You deserve that. You deserved peace. You deserve to have your beautiful heart glowing and being at ease, don't you? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, sis. I'm going to get off here with you, all right? But, feel free to hit me back anytime, all right? And you continue to do this, all right?
You know I will.
You're loved.
You know I will. Thank you so much.
Peace.
And you too. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye.
If you or anyone you know would be interested in spiritual life coaching from a fellow empath, email afroempath@gmail.com or visit afroempath.com for more information.